Well, hearing nor seeing any questions, we'll begin. Take a look, please, at Sugya number 16, and we'll begin with the Mishnah, and then go into the Sugya in the Gemara. The Mishnah says, HaMikadesh et HaYisha, a person who offers kiddushin, betrothal, to a woman, the Amar, and after he finishes the act of the kiddushin, he says to himself, oh, what have I done? Kisavur hayiti shehi kohenet. I thought she was a kohenet, a bat kohen. Ve'arehi levia. And it turns out she's only the daughter of a Levi. Levia ve'arehi kohenet. Or he says, I thought she was the daughter of a Levi, and it turns out she's the daughter of a kohenet. Aniya ve'arehi ashira. I find out now that she's poor, when really I thought she was poor, and it turns out she's wealthy. Ashira ve'arehi aniya. I thought she was wealthy, and turns out that she is poor. Harezo mikudeshet. Nevertheless, despite the fact that he had a misimpression about who she was, nevertheless, she is mikudeshet. Mipnei shelo hitato. Because after all, she did not mislead him. She presented herself for what she was. He made a mistake by his assumptions, and therefore the kiddushin stands. The Mishnah goes on to say, Haomer laisha hareyat mikudeshet li leachar she'et gayer o leachar she'tit gayri. You will be mikudeshet to me after I convert. The man offering the kiddushin is not Jewish. After I convert, or after you convert, the woman receiving the kiddushin is not yet Jewish. Leachar she'eshtachrer o leachar she'tishtachreri. Or the man offering the kiddushin is an eved, and he says, after I am freed from my slavery, I want to be Mekadesh you. You will be Mekadesh to me after I am freed, because as an Eved, I can't be Mekadesh you. But I'm giving you the Kiddushin now, so that the minute that I'm freed later, you'll be my wife. Or after you are freed, she is, let's say, she's a Shivcha, and he wants to be Mekadesh her from the moment she's freed. Le'achar she'amut ba'alech, or he says to her, you're Mekadesh to me from the minute your husband dies. That must have an interesting background. Oleachar shetamut achotech, or after your sister dies, meaning I'm married to your sister. Once she's gone, you're mukudeshet to me. Of course, although it's forbidden to marry the wife of one's brother, it's permitted to marry the sister of one's wife. As a matter of fact, among Lithuanian Jews, there was a minhag davka to do that, to show that it's mutter as opposed to the wife of the brother. So in all of these cases, the man is saying to the woman, after a certain status problem is resolved, you'll be my wife. Le'achar she'achlotzlach livimech, ena mikudeshet. Or he says to her, you are presently in a bond of a levirate marriage to your brother-in-law. After he does chalitza and you are freed from him, you will be my wife. In all of these cases of delayed action kiddushin after status change, she is not mikudeshet. That is not acceptable kiddushin. Why? The Mishnah doesn't say. The Gemara will deal with that. V'chein ha'omer lechaviro. And similarly, if a person says to his friend, im yalda ishtacha nekeva harezu mikudeshet li, eina mikudeshet. He says to his friend, you know, if you're, the next time your wife gives birth to a female child, consider that child mikudeshet to me. That's not kiddushin. And then we have in the Mishnah a certain girsa which says, ואם הייתה אשת חברו מעוברת והוכר עוברה דבריו קיימים ואם ילדה נקבה מקודשת. But if his friend's wife, when he says this to his friend, she's actually pregnant and the pregnancy is already clear, it's visible, she's in, let's say, her fifth month and beyond, then what he says has validity. And if she indeed gives birth to a daughter, then that daughter is mikudeshet to the mikadesh. These last two lines, though, it's not necessarily part of the Mishnah, but it does appear in some nuskaot. Now, what is our Mishnah dealing with? There are two items in our Mishnah. The first four lines on the Rivadim sheets have to do with the fact that if she does not mislead him, he misleads himself, the Kiddushin are not affected. I'll just turn down my volume for a moment so that we'll see if it can help with the hum a little bit. There, my volume has now been turned down. And the second item in the Mishnah has to do with a man giving a kiddushin to a woman after after a certain status change occurs. And the Mishnah tells us that there is no Kiddushin there. All right, those are the two topics of our Mishnah. Now, when we want to look at the sugya and the Gemara, the first thing we have to do is scan, identify what kind of sugya it is and what its structure is. So let's scan it. What exactly do we have here in this Mishnah on the level of the Amoraim or Braitot? The Mishnah begins with the word, the Gemara begins with the words Tanan Hatam. Now, Tanan Hatam is a specific kind of sugya. Tanan Hatam means it is taught in a Mishnah over there. In other words, the Bala Sugya is based, this Sugya is really not on our Mishnah. The Sugya is someplace else. The Sugya really belongs on a Mishnah in another place. But for a reason that we have to explain, the Sugya is being filed here by us rather than being in the place where it should be. Now, so when it says Tanan Hatam, it's bringing the Mishnah on which the Sugya should have been filed. And then we'll discover in the course of the sugya why the sugya is filed here and not there. Okay, that's what Tanan Hatam means. Every time you see Tanan Hatam, you know it's referring to a sugya that really belonged in another place. It was connected to our location indirectly, but is filed here for reasons of editing that will that become apparent in the course of the sugya. After this Mishnah, we have in component number 2, now Eitan is asking, is the sugya filed here or is it also found there? That's an important point. In this case, it cannot be found there because the Mishnah is from Masechet Trumot and there is no Bavli on Trumot, which is probably why it was filed here, because there was no place to put it. You couldn't put a single sugya on Masechet Trumot, so it was filed here. In any event, the sugya on this Mishnah from Trumot actually begins with Va'amine Rav Aseh Mirav Yochanan. Rav Aseh, the third generation Israeli Amora, asks Rav Yochanan a question. In component number 3, we have Amarle. Rav Yochanan answers him. So we can automatically say, even at this point, before we go through the rest of the sugya, what kind of a sugya is this? Ladies and gentlemen, what kind of a sugya is this? Is this an Amoraic sugya or a Stama sugya? And why? Who would like to answer? Byron in Toronto says it's an Amoraic sugya. Absolutely correct. If this is an Amoraic sugya. The Amoraic sugya continues with component number 4. In component number 4 we have Etive. Yes, Bob, that's correct. Rav Asi came from Bavel. Yeah, he was part of there was a large group of Bavlim that came to learn in Tveria, in Eretz Yisrael, to learn from Rabbi Yochanan, Rav Asi, and Rabbi Elazar, and Rabbi Zeira, and many others. They came on Aliyah to learn in Eretz Yisrael, which of course is what I wish to all of you. In any event, not to compare myself, Chas V'Shalom, to Rabbi Yochanan, but to compare all of you to Rav Asi, and to Rabbi Zeira, and Rabbi Elazar. Now, we have then in component number 4, we have Etive. Eitan, do we have to go to Tveria? No, you don't. You can come to Elkanah if you wish, but it's closer to Yerushalayim. But probably better to go to Yerushalayim. There's many more yeshivas there. In any event, we have in component number 4, we have an Etive. Etive means that he asked him a question from a Tanaitic source. So here is a continuation of the discussion between Rav Asi and Rabbi Yochanan. Rav Asi asks a question, Rabbi Yochanan answers him, and Rav Asi answers back with a challenge from a Tanaitic source. In component number 6, we have Matkifla Rabbi Abba Bar Mamal. Now, Rabbi Abba Bar Mamal also happens to be a third generation Israeli Amora. That is, he was a colleague of Rav Asi. And Matkifla means that he is now attacking what Rabbi Yochanan said, based on a logical challenge. It's not a quotation of a Tanaitic source, because he doesn't say Etive. It's Matkifla, which means that on a logical basis, he's attacking Rabbi Yochanan. And then, the rest of the sugya, components 7, 8, and 9, are all Stama de Talmuda. They're all Shakta Vitarya. And Eitan asks, how do we know he's attacking Rabbi Yochanan and not the other? When the other, you're talking about Rav Asi? Well, because Rabbi Abba Bar Mamal, generally speaking, generally in Amora, if you use the term matkifla, that's a term for a logical attack on a source which precedes you, either a Mishnah or a Braita or an earlier Amora. So Rabbi Abba Bar Mamal is attacking an earlier Amora. Who could that be? It can only be Rabbi Yochanan in our sugya. So therefore, we have an Amoraic sugya here, which is an Eretz Yisrael Deka Amoraic sugya, which consists of a natural conversation between Rabbi Yochanan and Rav Asi, which is preserved in its original form, with an additional attack on the Shitat Rabbi Yochanan from Rabbi Abba Bar Mamal. And on top of this, we have a significant amount of Shakta Vitarya, which is coming to explain and augment the Amoraic sugya. Now let me ask you, we have the question that Rav Asi asked Rabbi Yochanan in component number 4. Do we have Rabbi Yochanan's answer? If so, where is it? Any suggestions? Do we have Rabbi Yochanan's answer to Rav Asi? And if so, where is it? I don't hear any answers or see them, but I'll give you the answer. The answer is no. We do not have Rabbi Yochanan's answer. We do not have Rabbi Yochanan's answer to the Etive. Now, this has caused certain scholars to suggest, one of them being David Kramer from JTS, to suggest that the Etive sugyas are fictional. That is, the reason why there's no answer is because there was no question. Because Etive happens to be just a question that the Stam of the Gemara is suggesting that Rav Asi could have asked. Now, this week I also happen to have the privilege of meeting with Rav Avigdor Nevensal from the Rav of the Rova Yudi in Yerushalayim, and he suggested the same thing, that sometimes Amarle sugyas are fictional. I suggested to him that that could not be so, because of it would pull the rug out from under the entire Talmudic apparatus. Because then you would never know whether Amar Rav meant Rav said, Rav could have said, Rav would have said, Rav should have said. And we have to, and our Masorah is based on the authenticity of the statements of the Amoraim. It's not just the conceptualisms of the Stam of the Gemara. So personally, I would disagree, and I would say that Etive is an actual question that Rav Asi asked Rabbi Yochanan, but we don't have Rabbi Yochanan's answer coming back. And we have an Eitan text. Is it not the text in 10a? No, because 10a is a Braita that's being quoted by the Stam of the Gemara to back up Rabbi Yochanan. But it's not Rabbi Yochanan's words or his answer. It's a Braita that is being quoted by the Stama, by the Shakta Vitarya, to back up Rabbi Yochanan. So we don't have Rabbi Yochanan's answer to Rav Asi's challenge. Do we have Rabbi Yochanan's answer to the challenge of Abba Bar Mamal? After all, he knew Abba Bar Mamal. He was a student. Do we have his answer to that? And the answer is no, we don't there either. We don't either. Bob is saying maybe in Yerushalmi. Oh, that's a very important point. Every time there is a sugya that comes from Eretz Yisrael in the Bavli, we need to look in Yerushalmi to see if there's a parallel sugya that would help us here. How do we do that? Ladies and gentlemen, how do you check whether there is something in Yerushalmi that is parallel to something in the Bavli? Well, of course, the simple way is to open up Masechet Kiddushin in the Yerushalmi to Perek Gimel on the same Mishnah and see if something's there. But that's not going to help us that much, because this sugya took place in Trumot. So you'll say, all right, so I'll look up in Trumot. I'll open up Trumot in the Yerushalmi and see whether the sugya is there, whether there's an Etive there. There's a more efficient way to do it, because if you try and do it just by that way, you're going to be looking for a long time. And you'll miss my next lesson, so it's best not to do that. There are two tools that you can use. Look in the Bar Ilan CD. Unfortunately, that won't help you, Eitan, because the Bar Ilan CD does not register yet those kind of parallel sugyas, Bavli and Yerushalmi. And Masorah Tashas will help you rarely. There are two specific tools, research tools, that have been created by recent scholars, which do this. One of them is to be found in the back of the Vilna Shas, called Yefei Einayim. Yefei Einayim, written by Rav Yelin, brings on every section of the Bavli to which there is a parallel Yerushalmi. He brings the sugya from the Yerushalmi, and sometimes he has some pretty important things to say about the comparison as well. You can find that in the back of the Vilna that has all of the Perushim in the back. That will be there as well. Yefeinayim. The second good tool to use is something called Mesorat HaShas Bavli v'Yerushalmi. It's not the same as the Mesorat HaShas that Byron is referring to. It's a different work. It's printed separately. It's out of print, but I have a copy. And if any of you are interested in such a copy, then I could request of my trusty staff to scan it into the computer and send it to you as a PDF document, of course not for sale, because it doesn't belong to me, but it is out of print, so it's permissible to give it to those who need it. So if any of you want it, you can write to me and we'll see if we can do you that service. But those are the two best tools for comparing Bavli and Yerushalmi on a page-by-page basis. Okay. Now, the next thing we need to do is to learn the sugya, the Amoraic sugya, because we're going to learn the Shaktavacharya when we finish the Amoraic sugya. Okay? Now, there is a question that I'd like to share with all of you that I was asked by Eitan by email this morning. Alan, if you would like a copy, please do send me an email, because I won't be able to remember everybody's email that wants it. So send me an email, and in response to your email, we'll try to get it out to you. Eitan asked me this morning, when he did his preparation for this morning's shiur, he said that as he scanned this sugya, how is he ever to know where the sugya ends? Because after all, if you look at the beginning of sugya 17, you'll see that it begins with the words of Rabbah, and Rabbah is third generation Babylonian. He would be in perfect place after the Israeli sugya. So how do I know the sugya just doesn't continue? And this is a very important question for those of you that are trying to learn the scanning technique, the pre-scanning, before you learn for content. The answer that I wrote to Eitan was that if you're dealing with an Amoraic sugya, then usually you can tell where a sugya ends and when another one begins. That's right, Byron, when the generations start over. Because when the generations retrograde from, let's say, generation 5 to generation 2 and then continues from there, then that means it's a new sugya. But that doesn't help us here, because here, as Eitan correctly noted, the sugya ends with Rabbi Abba bar Mamal, and sugya 17 begins with Rabbah. That would flow perfectly well, so that wouldn't help me here. It would help you in about 90% of the Amoraic sugyas, but it won't help you here. Here, the only way that you would be able to tell would be by the content. Here, you would have no help. You'd have to go through the content and see where your good seichel tells you to divide the sugya. I do have to admit that when it comes to sugyot like that, Amoraic sugyas like that, where we in our Rivadim sheets divide the sugyas is our opinion about where the sugyas should be divided. Not because others couldn't hold other opinions, I'm sure they could, but we've taken a position based on our best judgment, and we recommend it to those who learn with our sheets. If you're dealing with a stoma sugya, you can't determine where it ends by the generations of the Amoraim, because there either are no Amoraim, or if there are, they're presented out of chronological sequence as a matter of principle. And therefore, how are you going to know when the sugya ends? There it's only by content. You simply have to learn it, kaseder, and see where the content tells you the topic ends and a new topic is beginning. All right, let's learn our Amoraic sugya and see what we get. The Mishnah Tanan Hatam, the Mishnah from Trumot, on which the sugya is based, says, "Ein tormim min atalush alam chubar, v'im taram, ein trumato trumah." That if you have two parts of a field, or two fields of the same species growing, and one is picked, one has been cut, and is ready for truma and maser, and one is still attached to the ground, you cannot separate trumot from the cut produce in order to exempt the produce which is still attached. You can't do that. V'in taram, and if you did so, ain't truma to truma. It doesn't count. It's not acceptable. Even b'di'i avad, it's not acceptable. This is the Mishnah from Trumot. And on this Mishnah, the amine Rav Asi Rav Yochanan, Rav Asi asked Rav Yochanan. Now the term b'amine asked him is a term that denotes the question asked by a student of his Rebbe. Of his Rebbe. It's a question from a subservient individual to his master. Va'amine Rav Asi Mirav Yochanan. Amar perot arugazu tzlushin, yiyu trumal perot arugazu mechubarin, o perot arugazu mechubarin, yiyu truma, o perot arugazu tzlushin, lechashiyitalshu, v'nitlashu, mahu. So he's asking him, tell me, Rav Yochanan, what if the person says, the produce of this field, the cut produce, will be truma on the as of yet still attached produce, or you separate truma from the attached produce and you say it will be truma for the cut produce when it is cut, and it is cut, then what? Then what happens? In other words, can you separate truma for that which is still attached, or from that which is still attached on that which is cut, that will take effect when you cut it, and then it actually is cut? Then can it take effect? Amarle, so Rabbi Yochanan answers, Ravasi, kol shebiado lav kimechusar ma'aseh dame. That all that is in his hands, that is, if it is in your power to effect the change necessary to make it an acceptable separation of trumot and masrot, it's not considered to be mechusar ma'aseh. It's not considered to be lacking a stage of activity needed to make it possible for the event. That is, although the field might still, part of the field is still attached, since it's your field and you're holding a sickle in your hand and you have the ability to cut that produce down and to make it now acceptable to be used as truma, since it's in your hand to do it, it's as if it's already done, and you can say make it truma from it on other produce that's cut on the condition that it will be chal, it will be effective when it is cut, and then it is cut. Now this a concept of mechusar ma'aseh, that something that is missing a certain deed to be done to make it part of the parsha, is not only here in truma, it can be in other things as well. But we'll stick to here, what is here. Rabbi Yochanan here makes a very important klal, and of course the word dame at the end of the sentence is not the word of Rabbi Yochanan. That's Aramaic and from Babylonia, and it's just a gloss by the one speaking out the sugya, which was written down by the scribe. Rabbi Yochanan answered him, Kol shebiado lav kimechusar ma'aseh. Anything that is in a person's hand to complete, that he has power over, control over, then it's not considered as if it's incomplete, it's considered complete and operable. Okay. This is the question and answer of Asi and Rabbi Yochanan. On this, Etive, Rav Asi says, oh really, Rabbi Yochanan? That's what you're going to tell me here in Trumot? But I have a question for you from another Mishnah. From which Mishnah? Our Mishnah. The Mishnah here in Kiddushin. Who says, Omer la'isha hareat mikudeshet li liachar she'et gayer. You will be my wife after I convert, or after you convert, after I'm freed from my slavery, or after you are freed from your slavery, after your husband dies, or after your sister, who happens to be my wife, dies, after your your brother-in-law says chalitza for you, ena mikudeshet. And here, in these cases, you might say that some of them, at least, are in his power. I mean, it's not in his power to free himself from slavery. It's not in his power to free her from slavery. It's not in his power to see to it that her husband dies. Well, I suppose it is, but we wouldn't say mitzvah ba derech avera. I mean, the fact that he can, you know, shoot him doesn't mean that it's in his power to see that the husband dies, because that's not what we're talking about here. Or after your sister dies, again, it might be in his power to see that his wife doesn't wake up in the morning, but that's not what we're talking about here. We're talking about in his power under natural and normal circumstances without committing a vile avera such as murder. Or lechar she'atzloch lach livimech, he has no control over whether the brother-in-law is going to give her chalitza. He may demand yibum. Who knows? And therefore, these are not in his power. But the Gemara says here, in order just to direct us, but maybe becoming a ger is in his power. I mean, if a person decides to convert, he's going to convert, right? So the Gemara is going to deal with that. But this question hangs in midair by Rav Asi, and Rav Yochanan doesn't even answer. Now, it could be that he answered, but his answer was not transmitted. That is, it wasn't brought down to Bavel from Eretz Yisrael. And we have many cases like this. We saw earlier in this perek, in the famous sugya that we learned about whether Dibur is Mavatel Dibur, we saw there a series of questions of Rabbi Yochanan and Reish Lakish, one to the other, three to be exact, where we have question after question and no answers. No answers. And sometimes a Babylonian Amora will supply an answer for the Israeli, but that's not part of the sugya that was brought from Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, it's a common thing, really, that their questions will be maintained, but the answers won't be maintained with it. You can see the Nachota, the one coming from Israel, traveling 1,000 kilometers by foot, going north through Lebanon from Israel, attaching himself to the Euphrates River, and floating down all the way to Pumbedita. He gets out of there, he's probably starving, he gets into the yeshiva, they wash his feet, they give him something to eat, they put him up with a shtender, they say, okay, what did you come to report? So he says, I was in the yeshiva when we talked about this Mishnah from Trumot, and Rav Asi asked a question from Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yochanan answered him, and then Rav Asi said, I've got you now, Rabbi Yochanan, look about this Mishnah from Kiddushin, and he said, and then he stops, and they say, wait a minute, what's the end of the film? What was it that Rabbi Yochanan answered Rav Asi about the Mishnah Kiddushin? So the Nechota kind of scratches it and says, don't remember. Don't know. I had to leave for a minute from the base medrash. Didn't hear the answer. I have nothing to tell you. So what are the Bavlim supposed to do? The Bavlim then answer this question by the best way they can, by trying to suggest what could be Rabbi Yochanan's answer, what could be his svara for answering this question. And that's what we have in the Stam of the Gemara. Eitan is now asking, I'm not sure why the fact that Rabbi Yochanan's answer is missing is so problematic. It is only a problem if you think that the Talmud records everything, but obviously there were thousands of conversations lost to history. No. Yes, there were. You're right about that, Eitan. But even though things might, a whole sugya might be lost to history, this sugya was brought. I mean, this Nechota was sitting right there at Rabbi Yochanan's feet, and he was listening to this conversation, and some of it he knows perfectly well. And they were very careful about the way they reported. So now he comes to Bavel and he says, I had to go to the bathroom. I mean, what? I had to go out and get a cup of coffee. Why all of a sudden is the answer missing? But it is very common, and I have no answer or explanation for it, but that's the way it is. Now let's go down to the Matkifla of Rabbi Abba Bar Mamal. Rabbi Abba Bar Mamal is asking a logical question, not a source-oriented question like did Rav Asi. Ela me'ata, says Abba Bar Mamal, Hanotein pruta l'shivchato. If a person gives a matvea, gives a coin of shaveh pruta to his own shivcha, his maidservant, of course, he, on his own maidservant, has the right to free her, right? So he can say, matkifla rabbi, so if a person gives a pruta to his maidservant and says, harez at nekudesh l'leachar she'eshtach rerech, this coin is for your kiddushin after I free you. Ha'chinami dehavu kiddushin, that it's going to be kiddushin acceptably, because after all he can free her, right? So if he can free her, so that it's not mechusar maaseh according to your klal, Rabbi Yochanan, which mean that he can actually be makarish shivcha before he frees her, on the condition that once he frees her, the kiddushin will be chal. Rabbi Yochanan, is that what you're saying? And Ela Me'ata, why is it a matkifla with the words Ela Me'ata? It means you could not possibly be saying this. It's impossible for you to even entertain the notion that a man could be Mekadesh his Shifcha by giving her a coin and saying it's effective after I free you. It's unthinkable. And if it's unthinkable, that means your whole klal about something that's in your control doesn't hold. It might hold there by Truma, but it doesn't hold here in Kiddushin. And this is the end of the Amoreik Sugya. Now, if I ask you, why was this Sugya filed here and not in Truma? What will be the answer? So naturally, the answer is going to be because the sugya that was in Truma happened to utilize our Mishnah as an etive against Rabbi Yochanan. Rav Asa utilized our Mishnah. And therefore, if you can't file it in Trumot, where's a good place to file it? You file it in Kiddushin, where the Mishnah is used, and you attach to the top the words Tanan Hatam, so everybody knows this sugya is not from here, it's someplace else, and it's connected here by means of a quotation in the course of the sugya. And this is the way Tanan Hatam works all over Shas. There are many, many sugyas like this. Dozens, maybe hundreds of sugyas like this. You can find it on the Bar Ilan responsive project. Put in the words Tanan Hatam, and out they will come in their multitude. Okay, up to this point, is everything clear about the Amorik sugya? Eitan asks, can you clarify why these conditions listed in our Mishnah and this discussion differ from the conditions in earlier sugyot? I'm not sure I know exactly what you mean. Oh, you mean the conditions about you'll be Bekudesha to me on the following terms? Why is it different than what we had before? Okay, well, remember, what we had before is we had the Mishnah about double Tanai, right? So that's not so important here, because we can assume, according to Rabbi Meir, who requires a double Tanai, that he'll say, Harea Mekudeshet Li Leachar She'et Kayer Vim Lo Et Kayer Lo Ti Mekudeshet Li. Okay, let's assume he's using the double format so that it removes our problem. It removes your question from here. And the other conditions we have, he had at the beginning of the Perek, then there, the condition that he's putting on the Kiddushin is a condition that's based on a reality that exists at the time that he's doing the Kiddushin. Because, and she's free to accept Kiddushin, and he's free to give it. There's no personal status bar to the Kiddushin. It's only an action that has to be taken. But here, it's a status bar. The woman is not a bar hachi, and he is not a bar hachi to do kiddushin. A goy doesn't do kiddushin. A goya cannot accept kiddushin. There is no concept of kiddushin by non-Jews. Kiddushin only exists by Jews. It's a special form of male-female relationship that was created by God to provide holiness for the Jews in their family life. It doesn't exist by non-Jews, kiddushin. Okay, so now what exactly are we going to do next? We've seen the Amoreik sugya. Now we have to learn the Stama sugya. See, what is the Stama adding to the sugya we've learned? So in component number 4, we have our first Stama addition to the Amoreik sugya. And the Stama says in 4 bet, Bishlama kulhu lav biado elager havi biado. I can understand about the fact that in all the other cases, it's not in the power of the Mekadesh to affect this personal status change required to allow the Kiddushin to proceed. But in the case of Ger, it certainly is in his power to convert if he wishes to. Byron asks, why then have the case of the non-Jew asking if a non-Jew cannot do Kiddushin? That's exactly the point, Byron. The reason why it's being asked is for the sake of his saying, this non-Jew is saying, you will be my wife after I convert, because he knows he can't do it now. He can only do it afterwards. Once the conversion is effective, then he has a right to be Mekadesh. So he gives her the money now, and he makes it conditional on what's going to happen to him later on. That's why it works. It can't work when he's a goy. So in component number 5, Eitan is asking, are we to read this Stama as if it was speaking on Rabbi Yochanan's behalf? Yes, absolutely. But what it means, speaking on Rabbi Yochanan's behalf, it doesn't mean that the Stama knew that this is what Rabbi Yochanan would answer. Not necessarily. It's speculating this is what Rabbi Yochanan could answer. Not that he necessarily did answer that. Now, I'm not taking a position that there is no such thing in Stama de Gemara as traditions from the period of the Amoraim about what they would have said. There probably are, but not always, and certainly, usually not. But there may be from here to there. Anyway, in component number 5, the Gemara says, no, ger name lav biado. The ger, becoming a ger, is also not in his control. V'amar Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba Amar Rabbi Yochanan, because as Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, who is also a third generation Israeli Amora, said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, our Rebbe, who we're talking to here, Ger Tzarich Shlosha. A ger cannot make himself a ger. He requires the judgment of three rabbis on a vatin. My Tama, and what's the reason for that? Mishpat Ketiv Be, Kadin. Mi Yemar de Mizdaka Kule Hanitlata. Because it says, Mishpat, the word Mishpat is referring to this, that it's like a decision in law. And who says the three judges would agree? They might take a look at him and say, we don't want you. You want to be a Jew? Be a good non-Jew. We're not interested. Nope, no sale. And therefore, you won't become a Jew. So it's not Biado. And since it's not Biado, the entire Eight Tevei of Rav Aseh falls away. Because if it's not Biado, it is Mechusar Ma'aseh. And therefore, Rabbi Yochanan didn't answer. The reason why Rabbi Yochanan didn't answer here is not because he answered and we didn't get it. The reason why he didn't answer is because it wasn't worth even responding to it. It wasn't worth responding. Rav Aseh and Rabbi Yochanan probably went, no, Benet, that has nothing to do with what we're talking about. In those cases, it's not in his hand. He can't affect these things. It's not a kash on what I'm saying at all. Rav Aseh, think again. And I remember when I learned in yeshiva with my Rebbe that when I asked him a question he didn't like, so he went like this with his hand. He went like that, dismissively went, well, like that. And that meant, I don't even have to relate to your questions. Not even worth relating to. So, think again. Okay, so that's what we have in number 5, is we have the Stamma's attempt to explain what Rabbi Yochanan would have answered, or why Rabbi Yochanan did not answer, because the question didn't even start. Okay, so now we have the Matkif of Rabbi Abba Bar Mamal, that according to this, that Rabbi Yochanan says that if it's in your control, it's Mechusar Maaseh, it's not Mechusar Maaseh, and therefore it'd be good. So Abba Bar Mamal says, oh yeah, you want to throw away Rav Aseh's question? Because the Mishnah Kiddushin mentions all these cases that are really not in his control? All right, Rebbe, I got a better question. What about something that is definitely in his control? What about that? He's got a shifcha, right? He can free her, can't he? He can. So why doesn't he? Well, you can just say, you'll be my wife after I free you. That works. So number 7, component number 7, makes a very, very strong remark. And we have to understand what it means. It says, Hachi Hashta, that now, Hachi Hashta means now then. Now then. I'm going to tell you the teruts to your question. Hatam mi'ikara behema, Hashta da'at acheret. Hatam mi'ikara behema means that when she was his shifcha, she was like an animal. She had no independent thought. If he says to her, you're going to clean the floor, it's like attaching a plow to a cow and saying, now you're going to plow. Does the animal have a choice? Does the shifcha have a choice to clean the floor? She has no choice. That, she's like a behema. But once he frees her, he can't be makadish her against her will. She's now a da'at acheret. She's now an independent, thinking human being with her own rights and privileges, and she can say to him, take a leap. Not interested in you. So he can't give her kesef kiddushin when she's a shifcha and say, after I free you, you're mukadeshet to me, because it's not an automatic process. She's a da'at acheret. And therefore, it's not biado. Why is it mechusar ma'aseh? What ma'aseh is it chaser? Her agreement. Her agreement. A woman cannot be mukadeshet against her will. Okay, so now we've removed the atkafta, the atkafa of Rabbi Abba Bar Mamal. The Gemara is not pleased. And in component number 8, the Gemara says, Vela ha de amar Rabbi Oshaya. What about the question that Rabbi Oshaya asked? Now, Rabbi Oshaya is also an Israeli Amora, and he asked the following question. Hanotein puta le'ishto. If a person gives a pruta, a coin, shaver pruta to his wife, the amarla harea mikudeshet li liacharsha agar sheikh, ena mikudeshet. Hachinami lo Rabbi Yochanan, tahabu kiddushin? So the Gemara asks, Rabbi Hoshaya said that if you give Kiddushin to your wife, she's married to you, and you say, honey, this is for you to become my wife after I divorce you. She's not Mekudeshet. It doesn't work. He divorces her, and the Kiddushin is not Chal. What about there? He certainly has the power to be Megarisher. According to Rabbi Yochanan, this should be Kiddushin, shouldn't it? The answer is, oh, Be'emet. 8th Bet says, no, Mapitom. Nehidi bi'adol de'garsha, bi'adol de'katsha. Certainly it's in his hand to divorce her. That he can do. But it's not in his hand to be Megarisher against her will. When she becomes freed from him, from the divorce, she's now an independent thinker. She can say to him also, you know, once was enough. I'm done with you, Charlie. And that's the end of it. And therefore, it's not biado. And this removes the question of the stamma de Gemara. 9 Aleph 1, the Gemara then says, Tifshot, you can solve this, Devoi Rav Hoshaya, because Rav Hoshaya asked, this is not Rav Hoshaya, this is Rav Hoshaya, who's a third generation Amora, and he says, Hanotein shtei prutot leisha. From what we just learned, you can solve Rav Hoshaya's question. I give 2 coins to a woman, and I say to her, Hanotein shtei prutot leisha, be'achat amar lahit kachili hayom. With the first one, he says to her, you're mekudesh to me today. Uviachat amar lahit kachili liachar sha'agar sheikh. And the second one is, you're a kiddushin for me after I divorce you. He hasn't married her yet, but he's already has her get written. You see, that's what we call makdim refuah lamakah. Now, Bob is asking, did Rabbi Abba not know this distinction? Did he not know the distinction? Well, it could be that, I don't know, it's a good question. It's a good question. On the other hand, you could say, it's not a good question. That's what Rabbi Yochanan didn't answer. Okay. We have to see maybe how the Rishonim relate to this question that you raised. It's a good question. So, if a man gives a wife, he gives a woman 2 coins, one to be Makadisher, and one to be Makadisher a second time after he divorces her, that's, we can make, then the Gemara says in 9 Aleph Shtayim, Tifshot Mina, we can learn from our previous discussion, Delo Havi Kiddushe, it will not be Kiddushin. Dilma Ki Heche De Tafsi Kiddushin Hashta, Tafsi Nam Leachar Lecharkin. But the Gemara says, well, why? Maybe it is Kiddushin, because in the same way that she says to him, yes, I want to be your wife, and she accepts Kiddushin, why cannot she say now, yes, on both counts? Yes, I'll be your wife, and after you divorce me, yes, I'll be your wife again. Be an interesting romance, right? So why can't that work? And this is left unresolved. So our desire in component number 9, to solve a question of Rabbi Hoshaya based on what we have before, it doesn't work. Because, why doesn't it work? Because the cases we had before, where the woman is a shivcha, or the woman is already married to him, then she is living at the moment that he says this to her, in a state where she has no free answer capability on that issue. Because she's already married, or she's a shivcha. But if he says to a woman who's not married to him yet, she has free choice, and therefore she could freely choose now, to be married now, and again later, and why shouldn't it work? So there is no clear answer to the question in number 9 based on what we learned in number 8. Eitan is asking, so with this discussion left hanging, how does one walk away with an understanding for psak purposes? That is a very good question. The answer is, the Rishonim and the Gaonim, when they approach the Gemara, they need to create criteria for sugyas like this. The fact that it's left hanging means that the Gemara had no answer for it. And therefore, the Rishonim will have to decide on a regular basis, in all questions like this, shall we say that the answer can be resolved or not? The question can be resolved or not? Generally, the Rishonim will say no. It's been rejected by the Gemara. The Gemara has not answered it. It's left it hanging, which means that halacha is not going to be like that, generally speaking. But I'm not aware of any study that takes all of these unresolved questions and determines exactly what the halacha would be. How often do we find sugyot left hanging, asks Eitan. Are there lots? Yes, there are lots. There are a lot of sugyas left hanging by the Gemara. which is why we need the Gemara, the Gaonim, and the Rishonim in order to tell us how to resolve these questions. And these criteria that they establish are called Klalei Hora'ah, that is, general principles of jurisprudence by which they determine how to paskin in sugyas that are left hanging by the Gemara. Let us conclude this sugya. In component number 10, the Gemara then brings a braita which teaches like Rabbi Yochanan. Tanya kavatei de Rabbi Yochanan. Ein tormin min atalush ala mechubar, ve'im taram, ein trumato truma. This you'll recognize from the beginning of our sugya. This is like the Mishnah that we quoted from Masechet Trumot. But this is not the Mishnah. It is the din of the Mishnah at the beginning of a braita, because the braita continues and says, Ketzad, how is it that it's not a truma, that's not truma? Amar, if the person said, Perot arugazu tlushinu truma, Perot arugazu mechuberet, O Perot arugazu mechuberet yu truma, O Perot arugazu tlushin lo amar klum. If a person said, the fruit of this planter is going to become, when it's, that is now already been plucked, will become truma for the fruit of that planter which is still attached, or the reverse, lo amar klum. That is not worth anything, it's not truma. That's like the din in the Mishnah that we found. Aval, says the Braita, nevertheless, amar lechishi tol shuv venit leshu devorav kayamim. But if he says that this will be effective when they are picked, and then they are picked, the words are effective, that indeed can work. And this is like Rabbi Yochanan, because it's not mechusar maaseh, because it's in his hand to do it. Yeter al ken amar Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov. Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov then went a step further, and he said, afilu amar perot arugazu tzlushin, yu truma perot arugazu mechuberet, perot arugazu mechuberet, yu truma perot arugazu tzlushin, lichsheviu shlish, v'yitalshu, v'yiviu shlish, v'nitlashu, dvarav, tayamin. Eliezer ben Yaakov says that even if the produce of this planter, or this box of the field, have just begun to grow, they haven't gotten even a third of their growth yet, and he says the same formula that he said before, that the fruit of this block in the field will be truma for that block which is still mechubar, or the other way around, when it brings shlish, when it gets to a third of its growth, when it becomes really considered to be a plant for halachic purposes, and then it's plucked, that will still work. Okay, so if it will still work, that's even more far going than are the words of Rabbi Yochanan, who says that as long as he says lichasheyitol shu v'nit l'shu devarav kayamim. And therefore, you can see now in this sugya what is the relationship between the Amoreik sugya and the Stamada sugya. The Amoreik sugya brings us a basic principle of Rabbi Yochanan, that something that is biado eno mechusar maaseh, and we have two challenges, both of which stay unanswered, probably because they were not deserving of Rabbi Yochanan's reflection. He just rejected them out of hand and did not respond. But the Gemara tries to use the principle that Rabbi Yochanan has given us for another case in component number 9, and without effect. And Rabbi Yochanan is then backed up by a braita which says exactly what he said. Now, a question arises. If there's a braita that says what Rabbi Yochanan said, why did Rabbi Yochanan bring the braita? Why did he paskin? I mean, what's worth more, the psak of an amora or a braita? And clearly, the braita is worth more than the psak of the amora. So why didn't the amora bring it? What would you say? Why doesn't the amora bring it? No, why not? Byron says it was known. What do you mean? You mean he that he didn't know it? It was known, so he said something in accordance with it. The Amoraim didn't know all prices. That's right, Bob. The Amoraim did not know all the Braitot. Therefore, Rabbi Yochanan probably did not hear this Braita. Some people, some Chokrim, some scholars want to suggest that Tanya, the Braitot that are brought in the formula of Tanya Kavate, that those are Babylonian Braitot that were not known to the Eretz Yisrael Dika Rabbanim. But there's no solid evidence for that. It's only a complete speculation. Okay, so what we've learned here is that this is a Tanan Hatav Sugya. So far then in this Perek we've learned regular Amoreik Sugyas, we've learned Stama Sugyas, and now we've learned Tanan Hatav Sugyas. And you can see that these templates of Sugyas would be, it's relatively easy to tell us what their structure is, so that we can then utilize them in other places where Sugyas crop up, and we can pre-scan them and see what template they more exactly match. And that gives us the direction in the sugya. Now, as far as next week is concerned, for me, as far as I'm concerned, we are continuing to learn on Sunday, next Sunday, because although it is Shushan Purim in Yerushalayim, next Sunday I will be in New York, and I expect to be there in time to be able to hook up to you and learn with you next Sunday at 10:15 Eastern Standard Time. So I look forward to seeing you again next week, and if there are any more questions on the sugya right now, I'll be happy to answer them. Any other questions? Seeing none and hearing none, then this concludes our learning for today. And I wish all of you a Chag Purim Sameach. We should all be sufficiently sober by Sunday in order to learn together, which is the other side of the coin for being sufficiently inebriated on Friday so that we could not learn together. And I wish all of you that mazel as well. And that we should not know the difference between Haman and Mordechai. And Bezrat Hashem, just as Pesach, as Purim was a nes, Nistar, a hidden miracle. So here in Eretz Israel and around the world, we should see Nisim, whether they're Nistarin or Gluyim, and receive the Geula, b'mehera v'yameinu, amen. So Kol Tov, Shavua Tov, looking forward to seeing you next week. And please send me your emails if you have any questions or requests. Kol Tov.